Today on Solving JFK, we'll continue looking at the Dealey Plaza witness statements. Did someone see Jack Ruby just before the assassination? What did the HSCA conclude using the dick-to-belt audio? What new information does Buell Wesley Frazier have to offer? What was a man with mafia ties doing in the building next door to the school book depository that day? Was there evidence of a fourth shot fired in Dealey Plaza? And who was the babushka lady?
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
This is Solving JFK. I'm your host, Matt Crumpton. Just when you thought the events in Dealey Plaza that day couldn't get any more action-packed, we have the statement of Julia Mercer to deal with. Mercer claims that she was there the morning of the assassination at 11 a.m. and saw a man driving a green pickup truck. A passenger in the truck then got out and walked up the grassy knoll, carrying what she said looked like a rifle. Mercer pulled up parallel to the green truck, which was on her right. The driver then turned his head and looked Mercer in the eyes so that she could get a good look at him. Immediately after the incident, Mercer told friends about what she had seen at lunch. She assumed that the man she saw was Secret Service, and she said, quote, "The Secret Service is not very secret." When she left the restaurant to go to work, she was pulled over by two officers who had overheard her in the restaurant and said that she was needed for questioning because the president had been shot in Dealey Plaza, where she said she saw the man with a rifle. So Mercer was questioned for several hours on the day of the assassination by the police and the FBI. Then, on the next day, Saturday, she was shown multiple photos by FBI agents to help identify the man she saw. Of those photos, she selected four pictures as looking like the truck driver of the green pickup truck. When the officers turned one of the photos over, the name on the back was Jack Ruby. Then, the next day, Mercer saw Ruby on TV after shooting Oswald, and she realized that Ruby was the man she had seen. Remember, this Ruby sighting and Mercer then seeing his name on the back of the photo was before Ruby was famous. At the time Mercer says that she saw him, Ruby hadn't killed Oswald yet. 4 years later, when Mercer was being questioned by New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison, he showed her the statements that the FBI had attributed to her. She said that she didn't recognize those statements as her own. She said, quote, "These have all been altered. They have me saying just the opposite of what I really told them." The FBI's version of Mercer's statement was that she could not identify any of the photos, and that she was shown a photo of Ruby, but she only said that the person that she saw had a large round face that was similar to Ruby, not that she saw Jack Ruby. The FBI also said that the truck had a sign on it that said air conditioning, but Mercer said there was no signage on the truck at all. Mercer further said that the statement on the FBI report was a forgery and it's not her signature. After meeting with Jim Garrison, he told Mercer that she should use her maiden name for her own safety going forward. The HSCA tried to track down Julia Mercer in the late 70s when they were doing their investigation, but they weren't able to find her. She's disappeared from public view since her last interview in 1983. The thing I keep coming back to on Julia Mercer is that her statement to the Dallas Sheriff Department on November 22nd did mention air conditioning being on the truck. I know it's a small thing, but if she's saying that that wasn't in the FBI report, then how did it get in her affidavit to the Sheriff's Department on the day of the assassination? That doesn't make sense to me. I don't think we can just write off what Mercer said as being completely untrue. She had no incentive to say it. She didn't attempt to profit from it. And the statement itself resulted in her going into seclusion. But we certainly have to consider that she may have been wrong about what she says she saw. When Congress reopened the investigation into the assassination in the late 70s with the House Select Committee on Assassinations, or HSCA, its ultimate conclusion was that a fourth shot was fired from the grassy knoll but missed the motorcade. I'll say that again because it is shocking if you are hearing this for the first time. The most recent formal government investigation of the JFK assassination found that there was a second shooter from the grassy knoll. The HSCA's conclusion was based on acoustic analysis taken from a police dictabelt recording in Dealey Plaza. You can listen and see what you think for yourself. Here's the actual recording.
The first shot was fired 3 seconds after an officer says, "All right, Jackson."
The more persuasive reason to not put much stock in the HSCA investigation is that it was not an investigation at all. According to HSCA investigator Gayton Fonzie, the mission of the HSCA was not to solve the assassination. Fonzie says in his book, The Last Investigation, that the people thought we were investigating the assassination of President Kennedy, but we were just trying to get out a report. The conclusion reached by the HSCA was, yes, a fourth shot was fired, probably from the grassy knoll, which missed, but otherwise the Warren report is accurate. Some members of the committee wanted to pursue conspiracy more thoroughly, but they compromised with members who wanted to protect the Warren report, particularly as it related to the CIA's potential involvement in the assassination. In fact, the HSCA had prepared a version of its final report that did not include a finding of a fourth shot fired from the grassy knoll. While there was a lot of important information unearthed during the HSCA investigation, the final report of the HSCA should be seen for what it is, a political document. The bizarre conclusion of the HSCA that there was a second shooter is really just a product of political compromise, not the result of an investigation seeking the truth. On November 22nd, 2021, the 58th anniversary of President Kennedy's assassination, star Warren Report witness Buell Wesley Frazier gave an interview at the 6th floor museum inside the school book depository. Now, as we discussed in previous episodes, Frazier is famous for being the person who gave Oswald a ride to the building that morning. Frazier and his sister both claimed that Oswald had a brown paper bag. Oswald told Frazier the bag had curtain rods in it. The Warren Report says that this paper bag carried the Carcano rifle murder weapon. In Frazier's recent interview, which was in support of his new book that had just come out, Frazier shared some new information, about what he saw immediately after the shooting in Dealey Plaza. He says that right after the shots were fired, he saw another man with a rifle in the parking lot near the school book depository.
So I was somewhere down in the area of the Angle Park in there, and I was walking along and I looked up, and there was a man with a rifle. I was terrified. Stop and think, what actually happened there 58 years ago today? That's a crime of the century. It's never been solved. So I saw this man. This man was not a policeman. He was not a detective. If you could have seen the type of clothing he was wearing that day, this guy was a professional, all the way down to his shoes. His shoes probably cost several hundred dollars. And back then, in 1963, not many people wore shoes or in that price range. But the attire this man wore, starting off with his fedora, you don't tell him what the hat cost. His clothing, he was immaculate. This guy was a pro. He looked at me, and the look he had on his face was a cold look. He wasn't scared. He knew exactly what he was doing. And I was so scared, he probably thought I couldn't remember my name. And at the time, I probably couldn't have. But he puts the rifle in the back seat of his car. He's parked out at the Angle parking. And he closes the trunk and goes to open the door on his car. I turn around and I walk slowly back toward the front entrance of the Texas School Book Depository.
Wow, so Frazier says that he saw someone wearing a super fancy fedora with a rifle in the angled parking that was near the depository building. Today, the parking spaces are perpendicular with the building. But in an overhead photo of Dealey Plaza from 1963, you can see that the parking spaces in that lot, in between the school book depository and the railroad yard, were on an angle before. It isn't clear exactly where in the parking lot that Frazier saw this man. The bigger question is whether Frazier saw this man at all. He didn't mention anything about seeing a man with a gun in the parking lot to the Warren Commission. Here's what Frazier says in response to people who are doubting his story.
I was so scared. What I had witnessed that day and that time, I did see it. But if you had asked me 10 minutes later, I would have told you I didn't see anything. It was locked in my mind. I've read about this where people have witnessed things that were so frightening to them, it's just locked into their mind. And that's exactly what happened to me.
I don't know what to make of Frazier's testimony. It's true that people having recovered memories of past trauma is a real thing. And there's no reason to otherwise doubt Frazier's credibility as far as I know. But I'm not aware of anyone else who claims to have seen what Frazier saw. And more importantly, Frazier raised this issue for the first time many years later when he had a book to sell. Those two facts somewhat undermine his claims. Eugene Hale Brading, also known as Jim Braden, is often cited as one of the potential conspirators in the murder of President Kennedy. And while there isn't any evidence that Brading fired any shots at the president that day, his presence in the Daltex building across the street from the school book depository is often cited as proof of mafia involvement in a conspiracy. So what's the deal with Eugene Brading? According to his affidavit, Brading happened to be in Dallas for some oil business and was walking down Elm Street trying to get a cab just after the president was shot. He noticed that the school book depository was surrounded by police with guns drawn. He asked a girl on the street outside of the Daltex building if there was a phone inside that he could use. Brading says that he then got on the elevator to go to the third floor, and the elevator attendant noticed that he was a stranger in the building and then told the sheriffs, which led to Brading being interrogated and having to sign a statement. Okay, so what's so special about Brading? We do have some pretty strong documents to suggest that he was a nefarious mafia character, no doubt about it. For example, internal IRS documents say that Bunker Hunt, the son of oil tycoon H.L. Hunt and the brother of former Kansas City Chiefs owner Lamar Hunt, had, quote, connections with Brading. The document goes on to state that Brading, quote, has a record of burglary, operating a gambling house, bookmaking, mail fraud, conspiracy, and embezzlement dating back to 1934. Brading was allegedly in Dallas on the date of John F. Kennedy's assassination, questioned, and released. Also, he reportedly was in Hunt's offices on the day before the assassination. He was said to be 15 minutes away from the Robert Kennedy murder shortly before the shooting. You're listening to this podcast, so I know you've got a curious mind. Here's a helpful fact that you might not know yet. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $900 on average. Pop over to progressive.com, answer some questions, and you'll get a quick quote with discounts that are easy to come by. In fact, 99% of their auto customers earn at least one discount. So visit progressive.com and see if you can enjoy a little cash back. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $946 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2024 and May 2025. Potential savings will vary. Okay, so I've never been a huge weed person, but this guy that I know, let's just say, is. So whether you're like me or the guy I know, or you're really into weed, whatever it is, you're about to nerd out big because there's this company called Mood, Mood.com, that's changing the way people buy cannabis. Here's the science, and this is the part I love. The reason different cannabis strains make you feel different ways isn't just about THC. It's also based on other components called terpenes. Terpenes influence how your bud tastes and smells, but they also affect what you feel. So one terpene might make you feel uplifted and energetic, and another one makes you relaxed and sleepy. There are dozens of these. So when you have the right combination of terpenes, you can feel social, focused, creative, aroused, chilled out, or whatever. You just go to mood.com, click Shop by Mood, and that's it. Want to be more social at a party? There's flower for that. Need to focus and get more work done? There's flower for that. Want to melt into your couch and watch movies? Yep, flower for that too. And here's the part few people realize. It's now 100% federally legal to have really great bud shipped right to your door. It's third-party lab tested and comes in a discreet box. Best of all, everything is backed by Mood's 100-day satisfaction guarantee. And like I said, you can get 20% off with code JFK. So head to mood.com and get 20% off of your first order with code JFK. Remember how Brading said in his affidavit that he was in Dallas for some oil business? Well, we later learned through a church committee document that was released in 2018 that Brading was actually in town for a meeting with H.L. Hunt, the father of Lamar and Bunker. He met with Hunt at his office on the day before the assassination. According to this document, Jack Ruby also visited Hunt's office the same day. On top of that, Brading worked out of the same office on the same floor with David Ferry, who was working as a private investigator for mafia kingpin Carlos Marcello at the time. And he did this in the months immediately before the assassination. Brading was in suite 1701 and Ferry was in suite 1707. This same document goes on to say that Brading is suspected of being the personal courier for National Crime Syndicate boss Meyer Lansky. The bottom line with Brading is that all signs point to him being an important mafia figure, no doubt about it. Based on these documents, he was the personal courier of Meyer Lansky and was working in the same office just a few doors down from Carlos Marcello's private investigator. The conversation regarding Brading isn't about whether he fired a shot from the Daltex building. The question is, why was he there in Dealey Plaza as all of these things happened? Sure, it could have been a fluke. Maybe it's a coincidence and he had some non-assassination-related oil business with H.L. Hunt, just like he says. That's absolutely plausible. We don't have evidence to prove that Eugene Brading did anything when it comes to the JFK assassination. But you have to admit, it is pretty weird that Brading has all these mafia ties. He meets with H.L. Hunt on the same day that Jack Ruby also meets with H.L. Hunt. And then he gets arrested in the building across the street from the school book depository right after the shots are fired. There's a series of pictures that were shot by news photographers Jim Murray and William Allen shortly after the shots were fired. These pictures show Sheriff Buddy Walters, who's easy to identify in his black suit, hat, and glasses, and Patrolman J.W. Foster standing on the grass near the curb on the south side of Elm Street. There's a third man in the photos, a blonde-haired man wearing a suit and kneeling down with his hand over the grass. When this man stands up, he has his hand cupped as if he has something in it. The claim from Warren Report critics is that this agent may have picked up a bullet in the grass in Dealey Plaza, and if there is an extra bullet that's not accounted for in the Warren Report elsewhere, then that would prove conspiracy. Sheriff Buddy Walters doesn't mention finding this bullet in his same-day affidavit, and Walters flat-out denies ever having found a spent bullet in Dealey Plaza after being specifically asked about it by the Warren Commission. In an article in the Waco News Tribune in December of 1967, Walter was asked about whether he found a bullet in response to it being mentioned in Jim Garrison's investigation. Walter responded, quote, "If it was anything, it was a piece of skull. Nothing significant." I mean, no, a piece of skull is not a bullet, but if it was a piece of skull, I think that would be pretty significant in this case. Nevertheless, according to author Steve Cameron, who interviewed many people close to Roger Craig, Buddy Walters investigated a fourth shot, and an FBI agent then picked up one of the bullets and walked away from the scene. And there is potentially some support for what Cameron is saying. Author Eric Tagg claims that Sheriff Walters told people that, contrary to what he had said publicly, he did find a bullet in the grass in Dealey Plaza. Tagg says that Walters told his partner, Alvin Maddox Jr., Deputy Roger Craig, his wife Dorothy, Inspector Sawyer, and some reporters that a .45 caliber slug was found in Dealey Plaza. There's an entire documentary by Mark Oakes called On the Trail of the Mystery FBI Men that is on this exact topic of whether Sheriff Walter found a fourth bullet in Dealey Plaza. Oakes interviewed Walter's widow, Dorothy Walter, who said that Buddy told her that, quote, "An FBI man picked up the bullet that was lying in the grass next to the manhole cover." Buddy's former partner Alvin Maddox tells Oakes in the documentary that a bullet was picked up from Dealey Plaza. In the Fort Worth Star-Telegraph on the day after the assassination, there was a picture of the ground in Dealey Plaza with the caption, quote, assassin's bullet. One of the rifle bullets fired by the murderer of President Kennedy lies in the grass across Elm Street. Dallas police officer J.W. Foster, who is seen in these famous photos with Walters and the unknown agent, said in his Warren Commission testimony that he saw where a bullet had hit a manhole and then went into the turf. He said that he didn't recover the bullet because it, quote, ricocheted on out. This doesn't support the idea that a bullet was recovered, but unless this bullet somehow hit the manhole cover, then went through the grass, then hit the curb where James Tague was standing, it does support the idea of a fourth shot that is not accounted for in the Warren report. Two more witnesses who support the idea of the extra bullet being found in Dealey Plaza that day are Wayne and Edna Hartman. After hearing on the radio that the FBI was conducting additional investigations of the grass area at Dealey Plaza, the Hartmans came forward and said that they saw gouged out holes in the grass near the manhole cover minutes after the shooting had ended. The hole was 1.5 inches in diameter and 18 to 24 inches long. The FBI report noted that the hole in the grass observed by the Hartmans is not in line with the mark on the curb, presumably from James Tague. The FBI later sent agents Pinkston and Barrett back to Dealey Plaza to conduct a metal detector search of the area 9 months later, and 9 months later, they didn't find any bullets. No real surprises there. So to recap, we have a photo showing law enforcement officers, at a minimum, looking closely at the ground and possibly one of them picking up a bullet or a piece of skull or something. But then when we look at what Officer J.W. Foster, one of the men in that photo, told the Warren Commission, he says that they did not pick up a bullet, but there was a bullet that hit the manhole cover, then hit the grass and ricocheted out. Then we have an FBI report about the gouged out hole that Wayne and Edna Hartman saw, which seems like the same one that Officer Foster's talking about. And the FBI goes out of its way to say that this hole is not lined up with the mark on the curb, which again, I believe is a reference to where James Tague was hit. So putting all this together, it sounds like they did not recover a bullet, but there is evidence of a bullet potentially having been there. So who was this mysterious FBI agent? The prime suspect among Warren Report critics is Bob Barrett. Retired FBI agent Robert Gemberling told Mark Oaks on camera for his documentary, quote, "I know Bob Barrett very well. Of all the agents who worked on this case, the picture resembles Bob Barrett the most." Barrett signed a sworn statement on October 18th of 1967 in connection with photos that were related to the assassination that he obtained from a woman named Patsy Paschal. In that statement, Barrett says that he was there in Dealey Plaza shortly after the assassination. In Oaks' documentary, he calls Agent Barrett on the phone and asks him if he would autograph some photos if Oaks sends them to him. He then sends these photos to Barrett, but Barrett doesn't sign the photos. Instead, he sends back a note that says, quote, "Mark, this is a photo of me. Sorry, yours truly, Bob Barrett." So Oaks then calls Barrett, and Barrett explains to him that he should have said it was not a photo of me. Okay, so there you have it. Barrett did not accidentally admit to being the mysterious FBI agent. He said that it's not him. To me, it doesn't really matter who the man in the suit reaching down in the photo was. I think the testimony from Officer Foster and Wayne and Edna Hartman about the bullet that went through the grass, leaving marks that are not consistent with the fragment that hit James Tague, is the real headline here. The babushka lady is one more witness in Dealey Plaza who is shrouded in mystery. Her name comes from the Russian-style headscarf that she was seen wearing that day. Most of the witnesses who were documented on film in Dealey Plaza were known and accounted for. But like the umbrella man and the dark-complected man, the identity of the babushka lady was not immediately known. The babushka lady can be seen standing to the right of Mary Moorman and Jean Hill in a film taken by Mary Muchmore. She has a camera in her hands, and the film from this camera was never discovered. This begs the question, what was on the film, and who was the babushka lady? In 1970, a woman named Beverly Oliver told conspiracy researcher and author Gary Shaw that she was the babushka lady. She says that she filmed the assassination with a Super 8 Yashica camera and had to turn it over to two FBI agents immediately after the assassination. She said that the FBI agents told her they'd give her the film back in 10 days, but they never did. Gary Shaw wanted to confirm that Oliver was telling him the truth, and Shaw had seen the Zapruder film, which was not public at the time. So he knew the location of the babushka lady from the film and knew that Oliver hadn't seen the film. So he asked her to show him exactly where she was standing when the shots were fired. And Shaw was surprised when Oliver went to the exact location where the babushka lady would have been. But Oliver also made some shocking claims in her book, Nightmare in Dallas, including that she frequently visited the Carousel Club and personally knew its owner, Jack Ruby. She said that 2 weeks before the assassination, Ruby introduced her to his friend, Lee Oswald, of the CIA. She also said that she frequently saw New Orleans mafia figure and possible CIA asset, David Ferry, at the Carousel Club. Oliver said that Ferry was at the Carousel Club so often that she thought he was a manager there. There are reasons to think that Beverly Oliver may not be the babushka lady. First, she doesn't look much like the babushka lady, which is subjective, but the babushka lady looks much older to me than a 17-year-old, which would have been Oliver's age at the time. Oliver claims that a dancer named Jada witnessed her with Ruby and Oswald, but Jada had quit the Carousel Club earlier and the dates didn't match up. After Oliver came forward as the babushka lady, it was later discovered that the Super 8 Yashica camera wasn't made until 1969. Now, Oliver responded to this criticism by telling the Assassination Records Review Board that she never said it was a Super 8 Yashica. She just said it was an 8mm camera, and she was misquoted by researchers. She also confirmed that her testimony to the HSCA just said that she had a movie camera, not the Super 8 Yashica that didn't exist yet. So was Beverly Oliver the babushka lady? I don't believe so. It's possible, but in my opinion, the more details you learn, the less the story holds up. Next time on Solving JFK, we'll have a Dealey Plaza recap and rebuttals episode going over all of the key issues that we've covered over these last four episodes. Then we'll be off for a week before starting a multi-part series on the medical evidence. If you heard anything on this episode that lacks context or you think is incorrect, please let us know. You can email solvingjfkpodcast@gmail.com. Please provide a citation and we'll consider it for a future rebuttal episode.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Thanks for listening. Visit SolvingJFKPodcast.com for more information.